no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. First off this week is Hallmark Playhouse, their story from August 19th, 1948, Drums Along the Mohawk. After that, it's Mystery House and Bases Loaded, their episode from June 14th, 1946.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. From Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you an exciting dramatization of an unforgettable story on the Hallmark Playhouse. Tonight's story was chosen from the world of fiction by one of the world's best-known authors. Hallmark is proud to present the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight on the Hallmark Playhouse, we are presenting Drums Along the Mohawk by Walter D. Edmonds. You know, Mr. Edmonds was born and raised in the historic region he writes about, and he has used with great skill the raw material of America's early days, that saga of gallantry and endurance, of battles against nature as well as with the Indians.
Indians. You know, Mr. Hilton, nowadays we tend to think of the Indians as characters in boys' stories.
Yes, that's true. Or else we are influenced by our sympathy for the friendly, decent, and rather sad people who are their living descendants today. Consequently, many of us find it hard to imagine the terror in which the Indians were held by the early settlers as they pushed up the valleys from the eastern seaboard. One of those valleys is Mr. Edmonds' Mohawk, which descends to the Hudson River near Albany. Last year, I drove across America from coast to coast, traveling, incidentally, about 10,000 miles, and taking 6 weeks for the job, which is perhaps the best way to make such a trip. And the last lap across New York State was down the Mohawk Valley, still rich in the beauties of the countryside, but also clustered with busy industrial cities. As I drove, I couldn't help remembering Mr. Edmonds' fine story and the great days it told of. But before we begin, here's Frank Goss, who has a message from the people who bring you these stories.
There are Hallmark cards for every memorable occasion on your calendar. For birthdays, anniversaries, holidays. Yes, for every occasion that calls for remembrance, for a friendly greeting, a word of good cheer, an expression of sympathy. There is a Hallmark card that says just what you want to say, the way you want to say it. And that identifying name on the back, Hallmark. Well, that says you cared enough to send the very best. And now, here is James Hilton and Drums Along the Mohawk.
You are about to hear the story of the American Revolution, not in terms of Valley Forge and Yorktown, but as it was endured in the deep woods and on the exposed farms, as the settlers fought Indians led against them by white renegades who had sold out to the enemy.
If you live here in the Mohawk, you always keep listening for the sound of drums. If you can't hear them, you know that they're there anyhow, somewhere just beyond the next hilltop, just out of sight.
Her name was Magdalena, and to me she was more beautiful than any woman had ever been, or ever would be. She lived back in the sheltered part of the valley, and I saw her once and dreamed about her for months afterward.
I wondered if you'd be riding our way again, Gil.
I told you I'd be back.
I know. But in this country, you can never count on keeping a promise like that.
I knew I was coming back. All these months, I've been carrying the picture of you around inside of me. I've been saying your name over and over. Magdalena. Magdalena. Until it became like my heartbeat. Come evening, I'd look out over my land and I'd see you running across it with your arms outstretched. And I think that's the way it has to be.
Oh, Gil. Gil.
As I cut the logs for the cabin, I thought, these logs will keep Magdalena safe and warm. As I built the fireplace, I thought, here Magdalena and I will sit and plan and dream together. And as I built the door, I thought, no one but Magdalena shall ever open it to me. It's taken all these months to build the house. Now it's ready.
Oh, darling. Darling, if you knew how many nights I've wakened late, thinking I heard your horse on the road. If you knew how many mornings I've run down the hill thinking I heard your voice in the wind. If you knew how many times I prayed, oh, Lord, keep him safe. Let him come back to me.
Lana, my dearest. My own darling.
And I was so frightened because twice our men went up close to the frontier when word came that the war parties were out. My father told us how the Indians came at night and how the bodies looked. Their heads raw and bleeding with the scalps of it.
Oh, don't, please don't think about it. This is the beginning for us. Let's not talk of death or endings.
Love and hate and fear go hand in hand in the Mohawk, don't they? We have this day to love. But whether there will be another, we never know.
You're young to be so bitter.
I found my grandfather's body in the snow when I was 7. You don't forget those things. You learn in one indelible moment that nothing is permanent. Life, least of all.
I'll show you homes that are permanent. I'll introduce you to the people who've raised their children in this valley and who love it. I'll keep you safe if you'll have me. But, darling, with you beside me, I'd have everything a man could ever wish for.
Gil, to be beside you would be all that a woman could ever pray for. I, Magdalena, take thee, Gilbert, to be my wedded husband. For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. In sickness and in health, until death do us part.
And so Lana and I began our journey down the Mohawk. The air was cool and sweet on our faces. The taste of new country was on our lips. And all the world was ahead of us.
You know something, Gil? I want 5 sons, and I want them all to look just like you.
Why 5?
Well, 4 aren't enough. 6 would be too noisy. No, 5 is just perfect.
She smiled up at me. And suddenly love of her, of the land that we were going to till together, surged up in me with a new joy for all the years to come. She and the land were at peace that afternoon. And I prayed to God as I rode beside her that the peace would last for her and for the Mohawk. And so we began the new days. It was a rich golden summer for us and for the Mohawk Valley. She worked beside me in the fields, and her hair was like a fire in the sunlight. And at night, she'd us with a picture or the position of a chair or a curtain. Her face was something you'd want to memorize. Sometimes our closest neighbor, Mrs. Weaver, would come over in the evening.
Let me get you a cool drink of milk, Mrs. Weaver.
Thanks. Don't mind if you do.
Where's George?
Well, he had to go over to Captain DeMuth on business, so he just let me off the gate, but he'll stop in on his way back. Well, I must say, you fixed the house up real pretty, Lana.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
And you're certainly lucky to have that cow. Only one other in this part of the country. Reels used to have one, but the Indians got him. So what's that feather on top of the cabinet?
Oh, well, let me show you. It's a peacock feather. My grandmother gave it to my mother when she went west, and my mother gave it to me, so I'd have a reminder of home always in sight.
Like a feather from an angel's wing.
Just beautiful, isn't it?
Well, has George had any news about Muster Day?
Well, they're still having it tomorrow. Man stopped by this morning and told us they'd had a raid down the valley ways. There was white men painted up like Indians, and they were fighting right along with them.
That sounds like Walter Butler and his gang.
white men fighting with the Indians?
They come over the border from Canada and do whatever damage they can.
I wonder how the war is progressing. We're so isolated back here, it's almost like we're fighting another war.
Well, I hear tell they took the statue of King George that stood in New York and melted it up for bullets. And they're firing them at His Majesty's men.
Lana, would you like to go down and stay with Mrs. Weaver tomorrow while I'm away?
Oh, you better come, dearie. No point staying here all alone. Kind of gets on your nerves. Just you in the woods. Those drums out there.
No, I think I'll stay here.
But
I've got to, Gil. I've never stayed here alone. I've got to.
I hated to leave her alone, but somehow I felt that this was a battle she wanted to fight herself. When I got home that evening, she was very quiet. She hardly said a word at supper. Lana, you haven't eaten a bite.
I'm not hungry.
Something wrong?
No, not really. What was that?
Somebody's coming.
Who is it?
Can't see anyone. Mare acts like it was an Indian.
Why do you say that?
See her stomp her hoofs. She doesn't like their smell.
Well, shut the door, Gil.
No.
You aren't going to stand there in plain sight like that, are you?
What's got into you, Lana? Get over to the table and sit down. No need to act like a scared rabbit just because a horse has seen a man.
But, Gil...
Sit down. Why, it's Blueback, Lana. He's a friendly Indian. Hello, Blueback. Come on in.
Oh, you fine? Me fine. Shake hands.
Well, I got married since I saw you last. Meet Mrs. Martin. Lana, this is Blueback.
Fine. How do you do?
Well, sit down, Blueback. Was there any milk left, Lana? We haven't any rum, but Blueback likes milk fine, don't you?
Fine.
We'll get two cups and pour him some.
You can pour it yourself.
I don't know what's got into her. She's been skittish all evening. Here you are, Blueback. Say, what are you doing this way?
Look for deer. Found tracks two Seneca Indians. Me think trouble come again. Seneca send word my tribe weeks ago. War party on way. We mind our business.
Well, thanks for letting me know.
That all right. Me like you. Find friends. Me, you. I go now. I cut you willow switch. You got fine woman. Beat her a little. She be better.
Yeah, I guess I will have to do something. What are you doing?
Boiling the cup that thing drank out of.
Lana, you had no right acting the way you did in front of Blueback. You could have poured him some milk.
Am I supposed to feed him so he can scalp us next week?
He's one of Reverend Kirkland's Indians. He's a good Indian.
Good Indian.
Lana, he came to tell me that there's trouble coming. That the Senecas are on the warpath.
He did?
He doesn't know whether they're coming in this direction or not, but he wanted us to be warned.
What will we do?
Nothing. We'll go on just like we have been, but we'll keep our eyes open. We'll complete our harvest, and then we'll have the log rolling just as we planned.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gil. I'm sorry. I don't know what possessed me to act like that. But to see that Indian inside our own house...
I know how you feel. There are few enough that are friendly to us. We have to do our best to keep that friendship.
Gil, there's something that I think I'd better tell you.
What?
In maybe 5 months, we're going to have a baby.
Baby? Oh, Lana, that's wonderful.
Our first son. We're going to call him Gilbert.
Oh, my darling. My darling. It's strange how you never can say what you want to say at the biggest moments in your life. All I could do was hold her close and say her name over and over. The weeks that followed were busy weeks. We worked at fever pitch. We kept listening, listening. And then finally was the day for the log rolling. The neighbors came from miles around with oxen and horses to help pull the logs into the windrows for burning. It was both a way of clearing the land and having a holiday. The women sat on the porch watching while we hoisted and shouted and got the logs piled where we wanted them.
All right, I'm going to start the fire. There she goes. Now she's burning clean, Gil.
Yes, these logs are taking hold real good.
You'll make a pretty place for wheat.
You got deep soil here, Gil.
Gil! George, look up there along the ridge. Look!
We stood there in the silence, watching the shape of an Indian at the far edge of the burning, running towards us through the smoke. I could feel my heart pounding. I looked back at Lana standing motionless on the porch, and for the first time I felt my throat parch with fear. And then as the Indian came closer, we recognized Blueback, stripped to the waist.
It's Blueback! Come on!
Yeah, what is it you want?
As soon as I come, big war party.
Be here 1 hour. Maybe quicker. You go, stockade, quick. You all go quick.
Yeah. Oh, let's go. Come on, boys. We gotta get out of here.
You hurry, Gil. I help.
All right.
Gil, what is it?
We have to leave for the stockade as fast as we can. There's a war party on the way.
You back load. I help. Get blanket.
What about the car?
We'll have to leave her.
Suppose they burn the car?
Darling, we can't stop to talk. Just get the things you need. We have a long way to go.
Yes.
Hurry. War party, travel fast. You drive fast. I see you. Bye bye.
Oh, thanks. You're a good friend, Blueback.
Sure. Fine friend.
Thank you for all your help, Blueback. Maybe we'll be seeing you again.
Sure, but you go now. Men come pretty fast soon. White men with them. Order butler.
Get up!
Oh, Gil! Gil, I wanted our son to be born in that house.
Don't look back, Lana. It's easier if you don't look back.
It's the end of the world, isn't it? It's the end of our world.
Hold on to the sides of the wagon, Lana. Hold on tight. I started shooting in the woods already. Go on, faster! Faster!
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of tonight's story. But first, I'd like to tell you a story about a prominent journalist who learned something very worthwhile early in his career. As a cub reporter, his assignments were routine, covering uneventful daily occurrences, and he became impatient with his progress. One day, he approached his city editor and asked for a more important assignment. More important, the city editor exclaimed. You have an important job right now. You're writing about people. Forget about yourself. See with their eyes. Hear with their ears. Speak through their lips. Do that, and every assignment you get will be important. Seeing things through other people's eyes is important. It creates understanding, sympathy, warmth, the qualities you'll be quick to recognize in Hallmark cards. For those who make Hallmark cards believe that anything as personal as a greeting card must have an extra measure of thoughtfulness. That's why Hallmark cards always seem to say just what you want to say, the way you want to say it. That's why, too, your friends get an extra measure of satisfaction when they turn the card over, as you did, and see the name Hallmark, the name that tells your friends you cared enough to send the very best. Now, James Hilton continues with the second act of the story he's chosen for tonight, Walter D. Edmonds' Drums Along the Mohawk.
Gil and Lana's wagon clattered down the rough road. They passed the wagons of neighbors and friends all headed for the stockade. It was a night of terror and agony and torment for the settlers.
Our horses were all played out when they broke out of the woods at Skyler and found the level road at last. We could hear the warning bells. The sound of the bells grew louder and louder. It seemed to me that I'd never be able to clear my head of the sound.
Gil!
Lana was shouting at me, but I could hardly
hear.
What did you say, Lana?
Gil, I can't stand it anymore. Stop the wagon. I can't stand it anymore.
You've got to stand it. Hold on, Lana. Just a little way now. Just a little way.
Will she live, Emma? Will she live?
Shh, Gil. No point in getting riled up now. I think she'll live.
It's so quiet in the stockade. You wouldn't think so many people could be this quiet, would you? Was it a boy, Emma?
Yes. It was a boy.
One of the scouts just brought word that they burned every cabin in the settlement out of the ground. The cow's dead, too. Deerfield's nothing but a wilderness again.
Yes, I heard, but land's been cleared. It won't be hard to get going again. Look, Dawn. Yesterday was their day, but there's a tomorrow coming that'll be ours. And when that day comes, we'll have our homes again in peace. There'll be no more drums along the Mohawk.
I hope you're right.
Emma?
Yes, Lana.
It's morning. Isn't it funny that there should be mornings? And there's nothing but night upon the land.
Lana, darling. She turned away from me. Emma, she turned away from me.
She doesn't know what she's doing this morning. She'll be a while getting over this.
Oh, I'd give her my own life if I could.
Well, I know. I know. But a man has his wars to win, and a woman has hers. And sometimes, the most one can do for the other is pray.
We marched in the morning. Someone had made a flag out of ammunition shirts and a blue cloak and a woman's red petticoat. The women stood at the entrance to the stockade watching us go. When we reached the height of the hill and could look back, they were still watching. I waved with the others. And then we followed the flag out of sight into the valley of the Mohawk. We marched for days without any sign of action. We marched and our tempers shortened with our rations. There was a deadly stillness on all sides of us. Until suddenly...
They shot past his horse! Come on! Come on! Take cover! Take cover! Get behind the trees! In bed, boys! Two to a tree!
Here, mind if I share this tree with you?
Help yourself. But I don't understand why there should be two behind each tree.
Well, one holds his fire, and the other gets an Indian as he comes in.
It's not so foolish as that. Here comes one in our direction. Yeah. Help yourself. I'll take the next one. Hey, you got it. You're a good shot.
He's a white man. You can see through the war paint.
Yeah, swine.
I never killed a white man before.
It was him or you. Uh-oh. Here comes one for me. Come on, dude. Just a little closer. Exit, exit.
Oh. Well, kill him. Don't leave him wounded like that.
Why not? Look at the scalps in his belt. Let him suffer.
Oh!
Ought to get you?
Yeah, it keeps my arm.
Well, get on foot. I'll make a tonic.
I'll be all right in a minute. I'll be all right.
Here. Now swallow this. A little brandy usually works wonders. Here, let me help you to your feet, bub. There. Now drink again. Yeah, you all right. You only got creased in one arm. Me, I lost a ear.
It's so quiet. Where is everyone?
They quit, bub. They're all gone. We licked them. Come on, Doc will fix you up.
We won?
You bet we won. That's the last of them we'll be seeing in these parts for a good long time. Come on, Doc Petrie's over yonder.
Funny.
What?
I wondered what it'd be like if we won. I thought we'd be shouting, screaming, and laughing. But it makes you a little sick at your stomach, doesn't it? Taste of blood on your tongue and dead all around you.
Well, remember it and tell it to your sons when you're pushing your plow across the valley earth. Tell them how this earth was consecrated with blood and what price was paid to set the Mohawk Valley free.
About the casualties, I... Oh, my darling, I was so afraid for you.
There were 2,500 of us that could bear arms. We came back less than 800.
I know, but it's all over now. We can go back to Deerfield now, can't we?
Yes. Washington's taken Cornwallis in Virginia. The Indians are driven out of the Mohawk. We can live on the land now and harvest this peace we fought for.
Oh, my dear, I love you so much. So very much.
And in that manner, I came back to her. And I knew she was mine as she'd never been before. And that she would be mine as long as we both should live. And so once more, we packed our belongings back on their wagons, headed our horses back into the valley of the Mohawk. There's our land, darling. You see,
Oh, steady there. Oh.
Yes. Oh, Gil, it's even more beautiful than I remember. Gil,
come here. Steady, girl.
She's acting just like she did the day you said she smelled an Indian.
I'll say she is. Well, she does. Look.
How? Are you fine? Me fine. She can.
Blueback!
Well, Blueback, I'm glad to see you. How are you?
You build house again?
I certainly am.
I help. I bring something, Miss Martin.
Oh, Gil. Lord. My peacock says.
I save before they burn house. I keep for you.
Blueback, you're wonderful.
Plenty smart, Blueback.
Oh, how peaceful it is. How beautifully, quietly peaceful. We'll never hear them again, will we, Gil?
No. I don't think you'll ever hear any drums along the Mohawk again. Get up! Come on, girl! Go and hop on, Blueback! Get up! In a moment, James Hilton will return to tell you about next week's story. Meantime, I'd like to remind you that there's nothing like one of those colorful Hallmark dolls from the land of make-believe to make a child's eyes light up with joy. There are 16 dolls in all, Little Miss Muffet, Cinderella, Little Boy Blue, and 13 other childhood favorites. Each one wears a hat topped off by a jaunty plume that's a real feather. Each doll stands up by itself, and each one has a clever rhyme story about the doll inside. Children really love them. Grown-ups do, too, because Hallmark dolls are the perfect answer on many an occasion. A children's party, for instance. You couldn't ask for nicer favors or more appropriate place cards than these unique Hallmark dolls. Or as rewards for good behavior, children will be as good as good can be when they know that the reward for faithfully following your instructions will be a new and different Hallmark doll to add to their collection. And remember, these colorful, feather-hatted Hallmark dolls are just as grand for children who live far away from you as for those in your own home. Hallmark dolls, you see, are just as easy to send as any Hallmark greeting card, and they cost only 25 cents each. See all 16 of the charming and colorful Hallmark dolls tomorrow at the store where you buy your Hallmark greeting cards. Now here again is James Hilton.
Next week, we present State Fair by Phil Stong, a story far from the times when the drums sounded along the Mohawk. In fact, it's a tale of only yesterday and of the flowering of that destiny which the early settlers fought for. America, during those 150 years, had pushed westward and grown prosperous. She had also become a nation of comfortable homes and friendly neighbors. They had their fun, too, and all this is gathered together by the skill of the novelist and woven into the richly patterned story of State Fair. And the following week, we present To Mary with Love by Richard Sherman, a warm-hearted romance against the background of the big city. So please be listening next Thursday, and until then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Mystery House. Mystery House, that strange publishing firm owned by Dan and Barbara Glenn, where each new novel is acted out by the Mystery House staff before it is accepted for publication. Mystery House.
Well, you know, Mystery House has never published a baseball novel, Barbie. If we can catch the baseball fans and the mystery fans, we really have something.
Well, this baseball story we're trying out tonight has some good mystery elements to it, and also an exciting baseball game.
Yeah, does somebody kill the umpire?
I'm not saying who gets killed. You'll see.
Say, I wonder why it is everybody at a ball game always yells, kill the umpire.
Oh, that's easy, Tom, because his word is law. You have to take his decisions whether you like him or not.
Of course, Mr. Glenn. That's one of the few places in America where you are not allowed to make your own decisions. Now, with us, it's a question of stating your case simply and briefly. The rest is up to our listeners. For example...
Places, everybody. Set the scene, will you, Tom?
Bases loaded. Tonight's story opens in the locker room of a baseball club. It's mid-morning. Woody Saunders, star pitcher, is rubbing his arm as another member of the team walks in.
Hi, Woody. Oh, hi, Gabe. Just dropped in to limber up the arm a little this morning. I'm going to pitch this game if it's only to give that louse Garson a load of what I think of him. Well, the old soup bone's kind of tied up.
Well, go easy on the workout, Woody. You want to watch yourself.
Oh, for Pete's sake, Gabe. All I'm going to do is throw a few balls to get rid of the jitters.
Sure, sure, I know.
If we win, it moves us into first place.
Garson's got a lot of dough up. We don't win.
Yeah, he must have a lot of dough up. Offering me 10 G's. 10,000 bucks to toss the game away.
Has Garson seen you again?
Yeah, just before I came in.
10 grand. Boy, I could use that kind of dough.
You mean you think I should have took it?
If you keep on trying to get Jenny to marry you, kid, you'll need that kind of dough.
I don't take that kind of chances for anybody, not even Jenny.
Jenny's got what the sports writers call the money touch.
Still sore about me beating your time, Gabe?
Me? She's all yours, son, and I wish you luck. Oh, what do you want, Artie? Look what crept in, Woody. Our number one fan.
Greetin', boys. I just popped by to boost your morale. You feeling good, Woody? Think you can set him down this afternoon?
Listen, punk, even a bug like you don't rate the locker room. This is private. Beat it.
Oh, yeah? The Swede wouldn't like it if I was to tell him you bounced me from here.
So the Swede ain't here. And we're telling you to scram.
What do you mean he ain't here? Why, I just left him here. He sent me out to see a guy for him.
You
and
heard what Gabe said, didn't you? The Swede ain't here.
Well, he's got to be here. He told me to meet him here, so
yeah, I bet.
Well, he had me take a message to to a guy.
You started to say Garson, Artie. What was the message?
Nothing. Did it have anything to do with the game, Artie? Anything like making a deal to lose?
The Swede? Say, listen, all I know is I was supposed to tell Garson to meet the Swede here, only...
Only what?
I couldn't find Garson.
Woody, you don't suppose the Swede's throwing this ballgame, do you? Making a deal with Garson.
He's probably turning him over to the commissioner. The Swede's the best manager in baseball. Him throw a game? Don't make me laugh.
That's telling him, Woody.
How long you been hanging around here, Artie?
Only a minute. And the Swede was here. I was standing over by his locker talking to him, and he sent me to find Garson. And, well, I tried to find him, but I couldn't find the guy. So I came back like the Swede said to.
Well, he ain't here. If he was, his locker'd be open, wouldn't it?
Oh, maybe he's out in the diamond figuring strategy or something. Maybe you ought to open his locker and see if his street clothes are in it.
How'd we open it? We don't know the combination.
I know it.
You know the combination. How come?
Oh, he gave it to me so I could get stuff for him.
You're practically running the team, ain't you?
Ah, quit that stuff. I know the combination I'll show you, see? Let's see now. 7-14-3.
You're bluffing. It won't come open.
Oh, no? See? No!
It's a Swede. Dead.
Yeah. With a hole in his head.
Jenny, lay off. There's no use arguing. I'm going to pitch my darnest this afternoon. I might lose, but it won't be because I was laying down.
Sure. Go right ahead. Be a dumb ball player all your life. What's going to be left of it after Garson gets through with you?
Who are you trying to scare?
Oh, don't be so dumb, Woody. Can't you see? Garson means business. He's going to win his bets if he has to kill people to do it.
You think Garson killed him, huh?
Oh, probably not Garson. Some of the boys from his gambling syndicate, more than likely. And if you pitch this afternoon without being nice, they'll try to get you.
Oh, nuts. This is a ball game you're talking about, Jenny, in the ballpark, with maybe 30,000 people around. You think anybody would try murder in front of that many people?
Okay, go ahead. You're a smart guy. You know all the answers.
I've been knocked out of the box, baby, but nobody ever scared me out.
I'm not scaring you. I'm telling you. You could be a dead ball player.
Cut it out. I'm pitching.
To win?
I ought to slap your face for that, Jenny. I never pitched any other way.
Even if it means you and I are through?
What are you talking about?
You heard me.
You wouldn't walk out on me just because I stayed honest.
You're walking out on me.
Jenny, get a hold of yourself. Just because a Swede got
killed... Sure, he got killed. And the police ought to know right now that Garson's boys did it. But they won't catch him because he's too smart. Too smart for the police and too smart for a dumb ball player.
I'm no crook. If the Swede hasn't reported Garson to the commission, I'm going to.
Sure, be big and brave. And you know what you'll get for it, don't you? A pat on the back? and a slug in the head.
Oh, Garson ain't concentrating on me.
Wake up, stupid. You're the guy with the stuff. The fireball artist. The toughest pitcher on the team. If he can get rid of you, the ball game's in the bag.
You think one pitcher can win a ball game single-handed? Jenny, you're funny.
Go ahead and laugh, then, while you can.
Blake, I know you're the police, but we got a ball game to play. I ought to be out there right now, warming up.
Yeah? Well, maybe I'll warm you up a little, Woody. Sweet Benson was murdered. You and Gabe were the only people around the locker room.
The only ones you know, you mean. You think we'd have been there if we'd have killed the Swede?
Get Garson. He's the murderer. I told you he tried to bribe me to lose the game so he could collect a lot of dough. What do you need?
Maybe Blake's afraid of Garson, Woody. Maybe Garson's got too much pull.
Why, you... Look, we're watching Garson. Don't worry about that. And Woody, your story about Garson sounds good. If you had a motive of your own, it'd make a pretty nice cover-up.
Listen, Blake. There was no reason in the world why I should murder Sweet Benson. He was a good manager, and he treated me okay.
You're ambitious, aren't you, Woody? You'd like to be manager of the club yourself, wouldn't you?
Why, you listen up.
Yeah, you'll behave yourself. I can throw you into jail, chum, anytime I want to, on suspicion of murder.
Why don't you go ahead and do it? That'd leave your friend Garson a better chance of collecting these bets.
Woody, don't get the guy sore.
You two and this nut Artie were in the locker room when Sweet Benson's body was found. Artie showed up and found you two together. Woody, you'd have been there alone when Gabe showed up, right?
Well, yeah, but...
Right. The coroner says Sweet has been dead less than an hour when the body was found. Say, 45 to 50 minutes. You and Gabe were talking together about a half an hour. That leaves 10 to 15 minutes of time for you to kill Sweet and stuff his body into the locker.
Yeah? Listen, I got there just a minute before Gabe.
And you can prove it, I suppose. Where were you before?
I'd been to see Jenny.
Blake, you're all wrong. Woody couldn't.
If he didn't kill the Swede, he ought to be able to prove it then. He's the one suspect who was on the spot at the time of the murder.
What about that guy, Artie? He was running in and out of the locker room all the time.
No, Woody, that's a little far fetched. No motive. Or, maybe you can give me one.
Me? Look, all I know is I didn't do it.
Sure. You know something, Woody? I've had that answer before. From murderers.
Woody's no killer.
In my business, Gabe, anybody's a murderer until you learn different.
Huh. Nice, trusting guy. But say, we gotta get out to the ballpark. Woody's gotta warm up.
Okay, boys, okay. Play a nice game. But don't try any steals. You'll be watched.
One of the tightest ball games of the season. Right up to now, there hasn't been the slightest lull in the game. The one thing that everybody's been keeping their fingers crossed about hasn't happened. Woody Sanders is still in there pitching, in spite of the pressure, in spite of being held under suspicion of murder. Yes, sir, he's been pitching a terrific game, really blazing the ball right in there. If anything, Woody seems to be inspired today, and the rest of the team's backing him up with airtight ball. I talked to some of the boys before the game, and they seem to feel that they're playing this one for Swede Benson, trying to put the team into first place to make up for his murder. Well, it's the last half of the ninth, and Woody's got a one-run lead, but the bases are loaded as a result of two singles and an intentional pass. There are two outs, and if Woody can take care of this pinch hitter coming up to bat, he's in. But it's still anybody's ball game. Woody dusts his hands on the rosin bag. Now he steps onto the mound and gets his sign. He looks like he has murder in his heart. There's the windup and the pitch. Strike one! Gabe Stewart trots over from short and gives Woody a pat on the back. Still three men on and two out. Woody still has that murderous look on his face. Now he's set. Here's the pitch. Ball one, low and outside. Catcher fires the ball out to the pitcher. Now Woody steps back onto the mound, taking plenty of time now. Wind up. The pitch. Strike two. If he can sneak one more across the plate, the game's over. He's grinning now. Steps back in the box and... Just a second, I think he slipped. Yes, his foot slipped in. No? Well, this is a little confusing in the middle of the windup. The crowd's going wild. Ladies and gentlemen, something has happened out there. It looks like Woody Sanders has collapsed. Just a minute, I'm getting a report from the field. All right, thank you, Johnny. Why, it's fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Woody Sanders has been shot. Yes, I can see now myself. The blood is spreading out on his uniform, and his teammates are carrying him off the field.
That's what I like in a ball game. Excitement. But who killed Sweet Benson and Woody Sanders? And I wonder who won that ball game. Well, the second act of Bases Loaded should solve it. Meanwhile... And now, Act Two of Bases Loaded. Go back to the locker room of the ball club, which has lost its manager and its number one pitcher through murder.
The coroner says the bullet entered Woody's body at a point between his right shoulder blade and his spine. Came out just below his heart. Now, that means that it had to be somebody way up in the stands.
Yeah, on the second deck.
Yeah, maybe. There's the elevated tracks right alongside the park, too, Gabe. Only 20 feet outside the park and about 6 feet above the top of the stands. Somebody with a rifle...
Guy with a rifle that looked good on the elevator tracks, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I know it's nuts, but it's all we've got.
It makes it look like Garson, doesn't it?
Garson was sitting next to me at the game, and not by accident either.
Oh, I don't mean Garson himself. He wouldn't take that kind of a chance. But one of his boys.
Yeah, but who and why?
Why? To win his dough.
But he didn't win it. Jones, the relief pitcher, probably did better than Woody could have. He saved the game. There had to be some other motive, like jealousy or...
Or what?
Well, that guy Artie was wandering around the locker room, wasn't he, before the game? He had the combination to Sweet Benson's locker, too.
What did his angle be?
Well, with a punk like that, it could be anything. Robbery. Artie doesn't have a job. He likes flashy clothes. Sweet gave him money sometimes.
Yeah, I've seen that myself.
All right, suppose Artie goes to the Sweet for a touch. Sweet says no, and Artie argues with him. Artie gets tough, pulls a gun, shoots Sweet, and stuffs him in the locker.
And then comes back? No.
Well, he didn't expect to find you and Woody there. He wanted to see if he'd left any clues. Simple.
Maybe you got something at that.
And maybe not. It's too easy. It's too simple. Where was Artie during the game?
I didn't see him. After I was hit with that liner in the fourth, I didn't pay much attention to anything.
Well, if Artie'd killed a Swede, he'd have shown up at the game to keep him being suspected. And if he was at the game, he couldn't have killed Woody.
Somebody killed him, though. The same somebody who bumped off the Swede.
Uh-huh. And the same somebody who was up on the elevated tracks while the game was being played. Hey, you didn't come to bat in the eighth, did you?
Huh? Well, listen, I was out there at short when Woody got shot. If you think
I noticed you weren't in the dugout much of the time, Gabe.
Well, when I got hit by that liner, it just about knocked me goofy. I went to the locker room to get taped up, and I went back every chance I got. I didn't know what was going on.
Maybe not. What happened to you after you helped carry Woody off the field?
Well, I was kind of stunned, I guess. What with that jolt in the head, and then Woody, well, I kind of drew a blank.
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe? Listen, I couldn't have fired that shot. I was on the field. You saw me. 30,000 other people saw me.
Don't get excited. I have to suspect everybody.
Well, don't concentrate on me. I'm nervous enough without you.
Nervous? That's fine. I like to make people nervous. Solves murder cases.
Oh, cut the ribbing. What are you going to do about Artie?
Yeah, Artie, we still have him. Motive for killing Sweet Benson? Robbery. Motive for killing Woody? What?
He might have figured Woody was dangerous on account of being in the locker room. He didn't know how much Woody figured out about the Swede's murder, so he got rid of him.
You were in the locker room, too. If Artie is the killer, his next step would be to get you out of the way, then.
Oh, he wouldn't try anything on me.
Well, maybe not. But if I were you, I wouldn't take too many chances.
You already know why I didn't go to the game, Lieutenant Blake. I told you. I saw it, Woody. I warned him about it. I had a feeling something was going to happen.
Oh, psychic, huh? You're quite a baseball fan, though, Jenny. First home game you'd missed, wasn't it?
So what? I was mad at Woody. I told him nothing.
Mad, huh? Mad enough to kill a guy?
No. I just didn't go to the game. I was here in my apartment all the time. Every minute.
Alone?
Yes. Well, no, I wasn't going to mention it, but Artie showed up.
Oh, Artie. Now we're getting somewhere. Artie, the baseball kid, and Jenny, the baseball girl.
Oh, stop it. I don't know what you're getting at. All I know is that Artie came in about the beginning of the sixth inning.
Sixth?
Yes. I was listening to the broadcast. Artie came in and said he hadn't been able to stay at the game after the way he'd seen Sweet Benson. Sweet was about the only friend Artie had.
Mm-hmm. And Artie listened to the rest of the game here, hmm?
Well, he didn't have anywhere else to go.
Was he here when Woody was killed?
No. He got nervous about the eighth inning. Said he couldn't sit still, thinking about Sweet.
Ah, so he left about the eighth, huh? You seen him since?
No. Said he'd be back, but I suppose he heard what happened to Woody. That must have upset him worse.
But you're not upset.
What do you mean?
Jenny, you need some time to think up a good story. And I can fix it up for you. Come on. You're going to the station with me.
The station? The police station? Why?
Well, until we find Artie, your alibi isn't worth a plugged nickel, Jenny. You say you were here in your apartment, but... Well, without Artie, it doesn't stand up.
Alibi? Listen, I told you I was here.
Yeah, I know. But I've been up on the elevated tracks, Jenny. You were careless enough to drop this letter.
Elevated tracks? Letter? What letter?
This letter from Gabe Stewart.
I don't know what you're talking about. Hey, look out! Artie! How did you get in behind that curtain?
Shut up, Jenny.
Artie, what are you doing? How did you get in here?
Never mind, come on.
Artie, maybe you killed him. He's a policeman.
Come on, I said. He was all set to hang you. You had you in a tight spot, Jenny, with that letter. Let's get going, fast!
I'm a reasonable guy, Artie. I don't mind getting whacked over the head with a blackjack if there's some point to it. But I don't see why you did it. You didn't really think you could get away with it, did you?
Think you're smart, don't you?
Never mind that. Point is, we caught you and Jenny, too. And slugging me didn't help any. But I'm fair, Artie. I'm going to give you one more chance to tell me what Jenny had to do with this.
Nothing. I told you that.
You don't make much of a gal I had, Artie. Now, Jenny...
You quit picking on Jenny. Leave her alone. She didn't have nothing to do with it.
She's a little bit old for you, isn't she, Artie?
What are you talking about? She's the only friend I've got now that's Sweet.
Why did you kill Sweet, Artie? You could have gotten money from him. Did Jenny put you up to this?
I didn't kill Sweet. You think I'd kill the best friend...
Artie, you killed Sweet Benson because Jenny told you to. You knew about Garson wanting Sweet to throw the game. Jenny put you up to it, didn't she? She told you she'd cut you in on the money that Garson promised to pay her.
I didn't do it, and Jenny didn't do it neither.
You killed Sweet, then you got jumpy. You knew Woody was Jenny's boyfriend, and you figured he might find out something. Or you killed Woody to protect yourself.
I didn't, you dumb flatfoot!
And then you figured you'd have to get rid of Gabe Stewart next, because Gabe had written Jenny that letter about Woody.
What letter? What are you...
You know, Artie, you know. The one I found on the elevated tracks. The letter you dropped when you shot Woody Sanders.
You're crazy. I don't know about any letter.
No? Never saw this letter, huh, Artie?
What? Let's see that. That's from Gabe. That's the letter Gabe wrote Jenny.
Right, Artie. The letter you read. Made you mad. You stuffed it in your pocket. But you got careless and you dropped it when you climbed up onto the elevated tracks.
No. I saw that letter, sure, but...
Of course, Artie. It has your fingerprints all over the envelope.
Why, that dirty heel. I'll get him if it's the last thing I do.
Get who?
Gabe Stewart.
You won't do any more getting, Artie.
Listen. Gabe sent me after that letter.
What? Gabe sent you after it?
Sure. He gave me $2 and said he'd mail the letter to Jenny and then changed his mind. Said he wanted it back before Jenny read it.
Before Jenny read it?
Yeah. He mailed it at night and he knew it'd be delivered next morning. So he gave me the money to wait for the mailman at Jenny's and sneak the letter out before she saw it.
Now, look, Artie, don't...
That's the truth, honest. I went to Jenny's and got the letter and brought it back to Gabe, unopened. Jenny never saw it.
You're not lying?
She never saw it unless... Well, maybe Gabe showed her the letter.
Oh. Well, then, come along, Artie. We're going for a ride.
I know this is the street where he lives. He's got a one-room apartment.
Maybe you'll get out of this yet, Artie.
Hey, look! That's Gabe getting into his car, right in front of the apartment house. Hurry up!
We'll have to stop.
Hey, step on it. He's driving away.
Yeah.
For Pete's sakes, Lieutenant Blake, he's going to get away.
Don't worry, Artie, we'll get him.
But you've got nothing on Gabe anyway.
That letter, Artie. Gabe dropped it on the elevated track on purpose.
It's kind of crazy.
Sure, like a fox. He sent you after the letter so it'd have your fingerprints on it. He wanted to clear himself of suspicion, so he picked on you. He figured your fingerprints would be a cinch to get you hung for the murders of both Sweet and Woody.
Oh, can't you get any more out of this tub? He's doing over 80.
We'll get him. This next corner's the place. Hold on, kid. Hold on. Okay, Gabe. Come on. Climb out of there.
Hey, what is this? You're trying to run me off the street? You might have...
Don't work so hard being innocent, Gabe.
Huh? Can't a guy go for a ride without
you? You're going
for
a ride, all right, bud. But not in that convertible.
You think you can frame me? Listen.
I read your letter, Gabe. You made just one mistake. You didn't figure on Artie coming to Jenny's rescue.
I don't know what you're talking about.
When Artie hit me over the head in Jenny's apartment, I knew he wasn't the murderer. Because no murderer would worry about me trying to catch somebody else. Oh, no. He'd love that.
You tried to frame me with that letter.
Yeah. He's right, Gabe. You figured if you wrote a letter to Jenny telling her about your troubles with Sweet Benson and that you knew she was working on Woody Sanders, it'd look like the kind of a letter that'd make Artie sore. Getting him to get it and then leaving it on the tracks with his fingerprints on it, that was kind of cute.
Oh, you're nuts. I couldn't have killed Woody. I was right there on the field.
Ah, that was a honey, Gabe. Big league staff, you betcha. There's only one guy on the baseball field who's always exactly in the same spot when he starts a play, and that's the pitcher. He toes the rubber on the pitching mound, his arms up. A set target.
What are you talking about?
That whole business about the elevated track was a lot of malarkey, just to throw us off the track.
Huh?
Sure, you left the letter on the tracks. You had plenty of chance to do it. But the shot wasn't fired from there.
No? Where was it fired from then?
Well, the easiest place to fasten a rifle firmly would be on the light tower on top of the grandstand. You could sight it right down to the pitcher's mound and wire it there.
And then I suppose it'd go off just by holler and speak.
The rifle aimed and wired into place. All you'd need would be a gadget of some kind to set it off.
Yeah, quite a gadget.
No, not so tough. A gadget like, well, maybe one of Garson's boys sitting up near the radio booth, all set to pull a string at a signal from you from the field. A string tied to the trigger of that gun.
No, you're nuts.
Mm-hmm, maybe. We'll go out and take a look at that light tower anyway. And don't ever think Garson's mob will cover you if you're in a jam. They don't play that way.
Just a second while I take the keys out of my car. Hey, look out! You. I shoulder you.
Yeah, I'm not a fixed target like a pitcher on a mound, Gabe. And that revolver of yours wasn't wired into place.
Sweet Benson and Woody both had it coming to them. The only reason Woody even talked to Garson was to try to get something on me. Woody and Sweet were fixing it to throw me out of baseball.
You dirty crook, and trying to hang it onto me.
You, always in the way. I could have...
You could have done a lot, you could. One murder wasn't enough. You had to make it a doubleheader. And you make two hits.
Yeah, two hits. And also two errors.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Relic Radio Show. Hope you enjoyed the shows today. Don't forget to visit the website to find past episodes of this show, all the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make this all possible. Thank you very much to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.
The Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.